With winning tickets sold here in California, Tennessee, and Florida, each winner will get just over $500 million.
Nikki Haley, very nice woman. She said, I'm an angry person. And they said to me, they said you were an angry person. I said, I am. I'm very angry.
It's not serious. There's another word for it that starts with a B. It's baloney.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:09 and it is Thursday, January 14th, 2016. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. We have a big show for you today. Another day of volatility in the markets yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrials falling 365 points. That's about 2.2% to 16,151. The S&P 500 fell 48 points. The NASDAQ was also off 160 points or about 3.4%. 45.26 was the close there. The close on the S&P, by the way, was 1890. Asian stock markets sank across the board today as pessimistic sentiment followed all of the sustained weakness we've been seeing in oil prices and the dive on Wall Street yesterday. It sort of prevailed over the data showing economies on the mend and or weak around the world. Japan's benchmark Nikkei dived about 2.7%. South Korea down just about 1%. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng off almost 1%, but the Shanghai Composite, believe it or not, which saw those big losses last week, actually rebounded 1.3%. Other regional markets also lower, falling in Taiwan, Singapore, Australia, and Indonesia. The day ahead, it will be a Labor Department report out later today. The number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. Freddie Mac is going to release this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. Also today, the Brookings Institute will release an analysis of income inequality among residents of the largest metro areas. It'll be interesting to see how Chicago falls into that mix. The Dow futures this morning are barely higher, up 8 points now. Dow futures, again, up 8 points. The S&P futures up a point. They have been going back and forth into positive and negative territory. We want to get right to our first guest this morning because it is very important that we speak to him. Paul Nolte, who really is one of the best portfolio managers around. You're sort of the go-to guy when we see these arrows go down. Paul Nolte, welcome to the Opening Bell. Should we be panicking right now?
No, I think the time to panic is well past. We're probably in the fourth or fifth inning, if you will, of this correction that we're seeing that really started back in May. So if you look at a time frame, corrections normally are going to last a year, maybe as long as a year and a half, and maybe take the market down anywhere between 10 and 20%. So I think really now is where you want to be getting your shopping list together more so than trying to get rid of a bunch of stuff.
Paul, by the way, is a portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management with an office here in Chicago. What's driving all of these markets down?
Really, it's a combination of things. One is obviously China, and we've talked about China now for the past 2 or 3 years. Are they slowing? How much are they slowing? Can you believe the information that's coming out of China? But really, our tell on that is when you look at commodity prices, and it's not just energy. You look at the agricultural commodities. You look at lumber, metals, copper, et cetera. All of them over the last couple of years have gone down fairly dramatically, and that's an indication of overall global demand. And global demand is really has not been all that great. So we're looking at GDP growth globally, 1, maybe 2%, so not robust, which argues for potentially lower equity prices because it's not going to flow through to earnings. I mean, it's the companies need economic growth in order to get earnings to get higher stock prices. And if earnings are flat, it's going to be kind of hard to justify higher stock prices.
There's some big earnings coming out this week, right? And next week as
well. We just got started with earnings season. You'll see a couple banks coming out with their big earnings later on this today and tomorrow. But, yeah, we'll be in the middle of earnings season starting next week.
The oil is one that, let's see, the futures are trading up just a little bit this morning, but still $31 a barrel. And that's, you know, I heard earlier this week somebody say that we might see $16 a barrel next by next year, maybe even $10 a barrel. How is that going to impact the world economy?
It will not be good for the world economy. Again, realize that a lot of the spending that goes on, capital formation, et cetera, a lot of that comes out of the energy sector. So when you're talking about capital expenditures, big projects, et cetera, a lot of that is driven by energy. So with lower energy prices, you're seeing some companies struggle. You may see a bankruptcy or two, not among the majors, but maybe some of the mid-tier, lower-tier energy companies, mining companies maybe. And certainly we're seeing stresses in the bond market when you look at the debt for a lot of these companies. They're struggling at this point. So obviously $10, especially if it stays there for a while, is going to be very detrimental to their companies.
But good for the rest of us, because it could be 99 cents a gallon of gas.
Well, potentially, but we're not seeing the pickup in retail sales. Mm-hmm. So if the consumer is doing, if we're getting that benefit from lower energy prices, it's not flowing through to other parts of the economy. So you're not seeing it in the Macy's and the Walmarts of the world.
Again, the Dow futures are up about 9 points this hour. The S&P futures up just a point flat. They've been going back and forth into negative territory. We'll be back with more of Paul Nolte of the Kingsview Asset Management Portfolio Manager here on the Opening Bell. Stay with us, and we'll get some more free advice for you about what you might want to do with your portfolio, what you should do as we continue riding this rough road through the markets and this volatility around the world.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. A turbulent 2016 continued yesterday with falling oil prices dragging down U.S. markets. The Dow lost 365 points. The Standard & Poor's 500 index fell 48 points, the worst day for the S&P since September 28th. And the NASDAQ slid 160 points. Things could be better or they could be worse in today's trade based on crude oil prices and the results of a Labor Department report on the number of people applying for unemployment benefits. There's more trouble for another once mighty name in retail. A handful of Kmart stores around the country will be closing by mid-April as parent company Sears deals with a third quarter loss. At least the potato crop is safe. The FDA has given the okay to an Idaho company to market a potato genetically engineered to resist the pathogen that caused the Irish potato famine of the 1840s. The Environmental Protection Agency still has to give its approval before the super spud finds its way to your dinner table. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning again. It's 5:20 on the Opening Bell. Dow futures are, as we monitor them this morning, now they appear to be back up again. No, they're down again. Down again, up again. Paul Nolte of the portfolio manager for Kingsview is with us. Paul, I mean, they've been going back and forth this morning. This is the kind of thing I was talking about earlier. Should we be watching these numbers moment by moment, be nervous like this?
If you want to maintain your health and good looks, probably not. it is worrisome. What bothers me a little bit this morning is I would have expected after yesterday's dump that we would see some type of a rebound. And the fact that we're not getting one indicates there's still more downside in the short term. But I think what you're seeing now is you're starting to see some value coming back in the market. You're getting some companies now that are selling reasonably priced. Like I said before, it's probably a good time to get your shopping list together.
And so when somebody calls you and says, Paul, what should I do? Sit by the sidelines or be What's your advice?
Well, again, it kind of depends on where you're at. With a lot of our clients, we're sitting in a little bit more cash now, a little bit more fixed income than we normally would be. So we're looking for those opportunities to get back in the markets. We're playing a little more defensive game. I mean, again, because the markets are as squirrely as they are right now, it doesn't make sense to get real aggressive just yet. So again, a conservative approach to the market, I think, makes sense at this point until the dust clears a little bit.
Are there any stocks that you like? Any ones that in particular that have some promise?
Well, I mean, there's this little company called Apple, I think, which is doing reasonably well. There's concerns now that they're cutting back some of the production in one of their iPhones, but that's kind of a normal for them as they get into production of the new iPhones. But they're generating a ton of cash. They're paying out a nice dividend. They're raising their dividend, buying back stock. So again, from a technology perspective, they make a lot of sense. When you take a look at a lot of the consumer stocks, the Kellogg's, the Philip Morris, those types of companies, no matter what the economy is doing, you're going to get sales and people are going to be buying stuff. And the same way for a CVS, Those types of companies, I think, make sense. They'll do fine no matter what the economy is doing. And it's something that you can certainly live with as we go through this period.
What's your prediction for the year? And I hate asking people to make predictions because it's so difficult, but what do you think we're going to see? I mean, you briefly earlier mentioned retail. Macy's had a horrible holiday sales year. Gap wasn't so hot. What do you see for the coming year?
Well, I mean, you know, that's part of the reason why I write a weekly commentary. It allows me to predict every week, so I can change my mind as the markets change. Really, I think we're going to be seeing a very similar year to what we've just been through with 2015. Relatively flat with a lot of excitement. So, as we say, interestingly sideways would be the year.
How important is it, how impactful is it that this is an election year?
It has some impact. The fact that we're going to elect a new president no matter what has a little bit of an impact. But normally you see years, an election year, pre-election year, the party in power wants to stay in power. So they will tend to do a lot more fiscal policy, a lot more spending to juice the economy to make it look good so they can get reelected. So historically, at least, the year before the election and the election year tend to be good for the markets. And then the 2 years following the election is when they raise taxes and do all those things that voters forget about come election time. Those tend to be the worst years for the markets.
What are the landmines, potential landmines that we haven't talked about that could blow up?
The landmines are, there's really two. One is the Fed. The Fed has gone and raised rates, and they're certainly talking a lot about raising rates 4 more times this year. And then there's a policy error. And, you know, that's an unknown at this point. But certainly the Fed that's being out there talking about raising rates, it gives the market a little concern. We're the only ones raising rates around the world. So it's again, kind of a concern for investors.
Yeah, they've said they're going to do it several times. I don't know about that. That makes me nervous.
The first time that they've done it, they want to raise, get back to something that passes for normal. The problem is right now, again, we're overwhelmed with debt, not just here in the United States, but around the world. And as you raise those prices or you raise those yields up, the cost of servicing that debt goes up an awful lot, and that's going to be an issue going forward.
The business of sports on deck. Mark Harmon is here in the studio with us this morning. Harmon, how's your portfolio? First of all, are you watching the markets like everybody else? And this is Paul Nolte, by the way.
Paul, hi, Paul. Good morning. Good morning, Steve. I'm watching, and I almost just got the pom-poms out. All right, flat. Well, take it. I mean, I think everybody right now would sign up for flat for 2016. Flat. Sweet. It's because it's been a pretty hairy start here. Yes. So, the $17 that I have in there, believe me, I'm hoping that it doesn't go down to 10 bucks. So, yes.
Well, you know, I think there's a pretty good chance that it's going to go down to 10 bucks, especially if you spent the other 100 on the Powerball yesterday.
That's true. That's true. I was right there, but didn't work out for me along with everybody else that played. Except, was it one winner? Is that how it stayed?
Well, I think there's three.
Go down to three.
California, Florida, and Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken. And the people in California, they actually gathered outside this little 7-Eleven where the store was like the royal baby has just been born. They all lost, but they're there like it's the biggest thing that's ever happened.
Well, the store owner gets a piece of that, so you know he's coming out pretty well, and he's good friends with everybody.
So maybe he'll give everybody dollar bills or something. I don't know how that works. Paul Nolte, one of the senior portfolio managers at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Very good of you to get up this morning and be with us on the opening bell. And Happy New Year, and hopefully we can stay in touch with you.
We're looking forward to a Happy New Year. So far, it's been a rough go. Thank you very much.
All right. And this is the opening bell. You heard Mark there just briefly. We're going to bring in Dave Bennett, too, coming up in our next segment, The Business of Sports. And we're going to be talking about college athletes, whether or not they should be paid. That discussion is coming up after we check news and weather, and that's all next. But first, I want to tell you the Dow futures are off now 18 points. S&P futures are off 3, indicating what could be a lower open on Wall Street later this morning. It's 5:27. This is the opening bell, and we will be back in just a few minutes.
The assistant manager of this 7-Eleven in here holding his hands up in the air, waving on this crowd at this winning 7-Eleven.
I consider Mr. Trump a friend. When I say it about my other friends that are running for president, they don't throw stones. And so what I would say to Mr. Trump is don't take it personally.
My recommendation is rather than pointing fingers at everybody else and talking about their work, he should take the time to talk about his work and the accomplishments, or the lack thereof, that would reflect the 1 year of his tenure.
Those are some of the stories that are happening around the world this morning. We will keep you informed on all of them throughout the morning. Steve Cochran Show coming up. News throughout the morning right here on WGN 720. This is the opening bell. It's 5:36. Welcome back to the program. You know, on Monday night, we had the big college football championship. The show was to generate a lot of money, apparently, for ESPN. One estimate was $7 billion. It's a 12-year contract there. There's also March Madness coming up, which is going to bring in maybe $11 billion more for CBS Sports. College sports is big, big money. And joining us this morning to talk about the business of sports is Dave Annett and Mark Harmon. You may know Mark. He's the weekend host, and he does all of the sports at WGN Plus for us. Some great reporting there at The Carm on Twitter. And I want to bring you both into the conversation. The launching point is this article. Some of you out there may have read this. If not, go to the Washington Post and read it. It posted on January 8, and it was pretty harsh. Mark, about college sports and all the money being made by everybody but the athletes?
It's pretty alarming is the wrong word, but it's pretty, how about amazing, how much money is going around in the game. And you're talking about, for the four teams that made it into the college football playoff, which used to be the BCS, each conference was getting $6 million. So Alabama out of the SEC, that's $6 million for 14 schools. Clemson out of the ACC, $6 million for 14 schools. The Big Ten, having Michigan State, 14 schools now. Also, and that it translates, just to break it down, $428,571 per school. And then, you know, you've got the Big 12 in Oklahoma, 10 schools, that's $600K. I can do the math there for you. So, and that's, it's, you know, that's aside of the fact there's $470 million going to the organization that runs the playoff from ESPN. I mean, $470 million to run a playoff. That's over a period of time. That's per year. It's a billion-dollar deal. So it's, when you think about all the dough that's there, this is not your father's or your grandfather's college athletics, and the students, of course, are getting a scholarship, which is sweet, but it just doesn't seem right at this point with that much money going around.
Yeah, and then you go and look at the salaries, too. USA Today says the 9 athletic directors in this conference made $1 million each. Nearly 50 make more than $500,000. And so people are getting paid in these positions, Dave Annett. So why are we still having this discussion?
Well, they are being paid, but I think one thing to keep in mind, it's also not your father's or your grandfather's job descriptions for these positions, for the athletic directors. They are basically CEOs now, and they are being paid commensurate with what a CEO of a major corporation, a Fortune 500 company, would be paid. I mean, really, if you think about it, because they're not, and I don't know that necessarily people have a feel for what athletic directors' positions really are. I mean, they're administrators, they're managers, they deal with human resources, they have to deal not only with the football team, the so-called revenue sports, football and men's basketball, but they're dealing with, I don't know, in the case of Northwestern, there are 19 varsity sports. And as far as the coaches, yeah, it's what the market will bear, and it's become, is it right for college coaches, for Nick Saban, to be making $7 million a year? That's what the going rate is for a top proven winning college football coach. Whether that's right or not, I mean, that's, you can make the same argument over NFL coaches and athletes and movie stars. It's the same deal.
Yeah, but I think maybe what, you know, from just if from an, a sports non sports guy looking in on this. So why do they keep hiking tuition every year? Why are some of these college athletes who get hurt not being taken care of after they leave college? I mean, what?
It's a fair question. And then the other side of it, look, it's not just the athletic directors. I mean, if you look at Michigan, who I have broken down here, you had their AD back in 2004, William Martin, was making $361,000. Dave Brandon, 10 years later, is making $900K. That's a huge, huge bump. And it's not just the AD. You're talking about a department that used to have you know, that just wasn't even close to the number of people working in it. You got 77 new full-time positions, and the overall budget for the athletics department goes from nearly $15 million, 14.7, to nearly $28 million, doubles in 10 years. So you're getting, I think one part of it is you're getting people that are hired to do whatever jobs they're creating because there's so much money in there, and they're paying them $200,000 to be the assistant, whatever, because the money's there. And I'm not saying, to your point, Dave, like, hey, you're running this huge corporation with all these dollars, you're hiring all these coaches. You should be paid handsomely. I get it. But it's so deep now in the departments of all these guys making tons of dough. And then you look at the kids, what percent actually goes on and plays professionally? And they're making so much money for the school on the top level here.
What's driving it all is really
TV.
It's television. And I mean, it's just as you said at the beginning, Steve, all this money that's ESPN is shelling out for the college football playoff was $14 billion, or it's $11 billion, I believe, for the NCAA championship for Turner and CBS. So that's where the money's coming from. And that money isn't drying up anytime soon. In fact, the money is probably going to get bigger. So I think what they have tried to do and what I think the effort is afoot now is to pay the student athletes or to, I guess, give them the real cost of going to college, and rather than a scholarship which maybe has this value attached to it, but then they don't have extra dough for anything. So they're trying to make it so that it's a little more equitable.
And this is particularly newsworthy this morning because yesterday you had the exchange between Governor Rauner and the president of the University of Illinois. Governor Rauner criticizing the University of Illinois for its spending. And he may actually have a point, because if they're making all this crazy money and they're still raising tuition and cutting programs and asking the state for more money, that's, I think, where the disconnect is, right? I mean, shouldn't some of that money be put into the process of educating and making school more affordable for everyone?
Well, I mean, I think in a lot of cases that's true. I've always been under the impression that the University of Illinois athletics operate kind of independently of the university. So, but yeah, I mean, your point, should the cost of, I mean, you're dealing with a much bigger issue here. Yeah. The cost of higher education, you know, how much of that? I think some of it does go back to it, really.
$1 billion a year from unpaid labor. That's what the NCAA is taking in by not paying the athletes. And, you know, people say, well, are you going to pay the college football player? You're going to pay the swimmer? And my answer to that is no, you're not. It doesn't work that way in the world. Why should it work that way on the college front? But I don't. If your jersey's being sold in the university bookstore, okay, and they're whatever it is, should that money not be put in some annuity at the bare minimum for him so that he can, hey, if they sold whatever, you want to take Northwestern, Justin Jackson, whoever, if they sell, was it 21, Dave?
Yes.
If they sell a ton of 21s, which they don't do anymore, it's just one number. Right. Then shouldn't he get that benefit? He's a special talent. That's how the world works.
Yeah, or maybe just pull back on the whole thing and just say, you know what, we're not going to make these kids stars while they're in college. Everybody plays in the same playing field. You're not going to be a star until you move on elsewhere. So we're not going to sell those jerseys in the first place.
That's fine too.
Yeah. All right. Good discussion. The business of sports here on the Opening Bell. Dave Ennett and Mark Carmen with us. WGN Plus is where you can find Mark Carmen. Also on Twitter at The Carm, and Dave Ennett at Dave Ennett. If you'd like to continue the discussion with them, I'm sure they'd love to have more discussion with you online.
Continue with Mark. Yeah. he could use it. He doesn't have any friends.
$600,000 Alabama strength and conditioning coach. $600,000.
All right. Mark, we'll have you on again. The business of sports, the Opening Bell. It's 5:45. Traffic, Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49. Welcome back to the program. We're going to be talking about the business of tech now. Ben Schiller is with us on the line. Ben is a writer for the magazine Fast Coexist, Coexist. Ben on Twitter at BT Schiller. Ben, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
You've written an amazing piece here that almost made me late for work today because I was playing with the chart on your story to see about my job and see if a robot is getting ready to take over my job. And it is surprising how many positions are, as you say, have automation potential. Tell us about this.
That's right. So this is research from McKinsey, which looks at the potential for jobs in the economy to be automated. And they look at the processes making up common jobs today, and then they match those up against the capability of new artificially intelligent machines, you know, robots and so on. And then they look at, you know, they give a score for each job of their automation potential. And what's surprising is that there are a huge number of jobs in the economy that now could be automated, which is quite scary, I think.
The story points out about 750 jobs over across 18 capabilities. Who is the most vulnerable right now? What occupation?
Well, I think generally anything that involves a repeatable process, something routine. So if you're moving boxes around a warehouse, working for Amazon or FedEx, for instance, it's very likely that those processes will be automated in the future. So the analysis says, warehouse operators, dredge operators, medical appliance technicians, anything like that. But at the other end, any processes that involve more sort of human capabilities that involve intuition and ability to empathize with other people are much less likely to be automatable. But I think what's interesting about the new type of robots is their ability not only to automate physical manual processes, but also more sort of high-end processes as well, such as lawyering or journalism, as you said.
Yeah, and artificial intelligence seems to be advancing very rapidly, and these robots are growing. We just saw the Consumer Electronics Show, and one of the things there that caught my eye was this robot that is going to be placed in homes to help take care of seniors who are retiring and retiring in place, aging in place. These robots that are really going to take could take the place of home healthcare nurses.
Right.
So, are we headed down a dangerous path here with some of this stuff?
Well, I think so, and I think the technology is sort of getting ahead of the debate about the social implications. And I think do we really want to have nursing homes, overrun with robots? I think if it's your own parent, I think you want a human being taking care of them. And I think there's a robot I was writing about the other day that's now on corporate campuses and university campuses, which that does this sort of patrolling job. So we're no longer going to have security guards in the future. We're going to have these kind of drones flying around, keeping an eye on us. And I think that's quite scary for a lot of people.
Yeah, it sounds like science fiction, but there is actually a point, and the term is escaping me right now. But the point where we get where the robots basically take over. I mean, that's a real threat, right?
Well, I think it's basically because the economics are just so overwhelming. You know, these robots don't need to go for smoke breaks. They don't need health insurance. They don't need to go on holiday and so on. You know, they just work and work and work. And once you've made the investment in them, and as long as you sort of maintain them a little bit, they'll keep whirring around doing the same basic job as human beings. So, and I think what I was trying to say in the piece is that if you're planning a career now, if you're sort of in your teens or 20s and you're looking for employment for the next 20, 30 years, then I think you really need to be aware of the capabilities of these new types of machines and really get on the right side of the wave.
Yeah, because from a corporate standpoint, the corporations are going to take the least expensive way out, and robots are really cheap.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're going to become cheaper and cheaper. I mean, because the really, really scary thing is these machines are sort of self-learning. So that they learn from experience, so they'll become more and more proficient in the future, and the cost will only come down.
All right, Ben Schiller at BT Schiller on Twitter, staff writer at Fast Companies. Fast Coexists has written a wonderful article about robots taking jobs away from humans. There's an interactive chart that you can go to on his story. We'll link it to you, and you can see if your job's in trouble. Ben, good of you to be with us in the opening bell today.
Thanks very much, Steve.
All right, Happy New Year. It is 5:55, and that's our show for today. Just real quickly, again, we're monitoring the stock market futures as the markets are reacting to yesterday's big drop. The Dow futures are off 26 points. The S&P futures are off 4 points. Have a wonderful day. The Steve Cochran Show coming up.